And welcome back. Good evening to you, one and all, coast to coast, and all of you around the world listening on our internet hookup, which is being brought to you by CRN Media. I want to make a quick note at the beginning here. The program archives are back. They are up for the month of November, and we're working backwards. They are up for free. They are available online around the clock, around the world, for all of you folks who are in search of as much information as you can get your hands on to help make sense of all this craziness going on. From time to time, a citizen, an individual, will step forward to voluntarily take on a major challenge on behalf of all of us. And one of those individuals is back on the program tonight. He is Clifford Carnicom, who for years now has been, I guess we're in our fourth year of this phenomenon, or military deployment, however you want to phrase it. There are a lot of ways to look at this issue of chemtrails. He is back, and his website is an amazing journey of information. It is a compendium of scientific evaluation, of experimentation, of research. It is all there. It is entitled Aerosol Operation Crimes and Cover-Up. Clifford Carnicom. The website is carnicom.com. That's C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M. And Clifford is back. And Clifford, I honestly don't know how you do it. The research, the amazing amounts of material, the legitimate and honest inquiry into this phenomenon it's mind-boggling. I don't know how you did it, but you did.
Well, good evening to you, Jeff, and thanks very much for the opportunity to be here. And I'm also real glad to hear that the archives are up. That's a very important contribution that I'm real glad to see is back. And I am involved deeply because I feel very strongly about what has occurred to not only this country, but humanity in general.
This is a worldwide phenomenon for the most part, at least in the developed Western world, certainly at a very basis.
You know,
you can build on that.
There's no question in my mind, literally from the first day that I began working on this and then saw the subsequent response from authorities, that this is essentially marked a turning point in human history, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the level of infringement on human rights and human dignity. And that assessment has borne itself out over time, as I think it was the beginning of a process that has now only continued and brought us to a state of affairs where, truly, as I see it, our nation itself is in jeopardy.
And, I guess going back for you newcomers out there, I think we have to look at this now as a four-year-long operation.
Yes, and that's 4 years in an overt fashion. My work started in February of 1999, had some preliminary observations in January of 99. You have some very good reason and actually evidence to indicate that the operations were underway in restricted or in more isolated cases several years prior.
We could call it a beta phase, test phase.
Several years prior, actually, mm-hmm. I have good reason to believe back to 94 or 95, mm-hmm. With fairly significant operations, but in the northwest part of the United States where it was naturally cloudy, but in an overt fashion, certainly from the beginning of 1999, and it is rather amazing, but we now have 4 years of continuous effort by citizens without an adequate accounting. In fact, all the more, the denial just rings stronger each day. And so in some sense, I think we've made a tremendous amount of progress in terms of the information and knowledge that we have, but in terms of the accountability and a responsible government, I think that this country has failed miserably to its people.
Have there been any lapses in the amount of chemtrail spraying? Do these things run in cycles that are able to be now pegged to a calendar year, to seasons? We in the Northwest and on the West Coast tend to watch these as they relate to incoming weather systems, of course, whether they be from the Gulf of Alaska or Pacific moisture currents that are brought up by the jet stream from the tropics.
There are definite periods where the activity becomes slack, and I have learned over the years, unfortunately, to not let my optimism become too high, because I've seen it several times. I have periods up to at least 6 weeks where things were very quiet, and I notice that there's an optimism that starts to build.
Let me guess, summertime?
There was one in June. That's right. June and July of this year were marked by a quieter period, and you started to watch the discussions and news that people were saying, well, you know, they must have stopped. But I've just learned through many hard trials.
For two years in a row, and I might hasten to add, in Northern California, Southern Oregon, in that particular area, we have a lot of reports that from about the middle of July to about the middle or nearly the end of August, nothing. Blue skies, nothing. And then all of a sudden, will the weather systems begin to move in again in September, the spraying picks up.
Yes, and unfortunately, you know, these operations could stop for months to even years. I mean, if you look at the lifetimes of aerosols in the atmosphere as related to their size, the size estimates of these materials that are being dispersed, from my analysis, you literally could be for months to years. In fact, it's not necessarily out of the range that there would be an indefinite effect. If you look at the size, at a certain size, it's about a tenth of a micron. Essentially, that particulate matter will stay up there indefinitely.
We're down to a tenth of a micron now.
Yes, my size estimates at the point of origin, best one would be roughly two-tenths of a micron.
And that can easily float up and be pushed around like dust particles are bigger than that.
Oh, probably thousands of times bigger, actually. So
giving our listeners an idea, yeah, these things can potentially stay airborne, as you say, almost indefinitely.
So that's why my optimism, you know, I wouldn't even begin to have the slightest degree of optimism until many months had passed. Not in the order of weeks. And if we can, Jeff, before we get into the material too much, I did want to go over a couple of preliminary items. And the first one was to thank you. And the reason that I wish to thank you, and I hope that you know, I think you do, some of the reasons are that you are certainly one of the only persons out there that have provided and offered a serious forum for open discussion on this subject without censorship over the entire 4 years that the citizens have been aroused on this issue. You have provided a forum for me to disclose all of my research, all of my information in an unrestricted fashion. And it's, you know, I understand you recognize my work, but you are an important vehicle by which my information has become available to the public, and I hope that your audience is as grateful and appreciative as I am, because it truly is unique. We can work very hard, and we can go through all the sources of information and media that is out there, and I can guarantee you that there is not a single individual or forum that has been provided at the level of depth that you have. So I want that known, and the more that I'm on, the more that I want that known, because your work is just as important to me as mine is to you, hopefully.
Well, I thank you. I'm very flattered and honored. I'm humbled to be able to even do this kind of work, frankly, and with people like you to bring on the program, it becomes obviously very important to a great number of people. This work, every time I start a program with you and I go to carnicom.com and just look at the massive data, it's almost overwhelming. It intimidates me because you've done so much work and it's all pulled together there. I hope everyone listening has been to carnicom.com, and if not, please do pay Clifford's site a very close and attentive visit as soon as you can.
Thank you, Jeff. And I also wanted to pass on a word from a well-known reporting forum that's out there entitled Chemtrail Tracking USA. I had a special request from the one of the organizers of that forum by the name of Lori Kramer, who many of us know as a serious researcher and activist also. But she wanted to emphasize to people to basically double their efforts to continue to call, to continue to holler, to continue to write, to continue to press, and to exert that force as a people that shows that we do not relinquish, we do not submit to the denials, to the lack of accountability that have transpired.
To the lies.
Absolutely, direct lies. And I really don't have any compunction about making that statement I made it very strongly up at a presentation in Durango, Colorado this last weekend, and it is to the point where I will put my name and reputation on the line to let it be known that the United States Air Force, amongst others, but certainly United States Air Force, has directly lied to the American public on this issue by characterizing the accumulation of evidence over 4 years by all citizens, including myself, and characterizing this entire affair as a hoax. And it is ludicrous to have this submitted and delivered from an official representative of our Defense Department, which has happened.
Well, you have that document on your website.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is a letter that they tried to pass off probably 2 years ago now. I had to make my call directly as I saw it and feel even stronger the more that this goes on. And, you know, if someone lies and it's that blatant and that direct to the American people, they need to be called upon it at whatever cost that is.
I agree. The EPA hasn't exactly distinguished itself either, but that's another story. Clifford Carnicom is my guest. Aerosol Operation, Crimes and Cover-Up Over These United States and Other Countries Around the World as Well. We shall continue in just a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along. A big subject, a very bothersome subject. Many of you have been watching these things for the 4 years and maybe even longer than that. So stay tuned. We'll get the latest research from Clifford in just a couple of minutes. Right back with you. When you go to Carnicom.com, be sure to scroll all the way down the page and take a look at some of those stunning pictures that are still up there. Fortunately, I hope they always are available because they show airplanes, jet airplanes at altitude with two engines laying off any number of streams of white, thick trails behind them. You can look for yourself, and if you have any doubts, they have pictures called mega sprayers, and these are aircraft that are laying out, looks like 8 or 8, maybe even 10 streams behind them. It's so blatant and so obvious, and many of you have just not looked up. But start looking up after looking at these pictures, and you will see for yourselves what's going on. For individual reports from around the United States, you can check on the left-hand side of Rentz.com under chemtrails and data pages and see a lot of reports that many of you folks have been kind enough to send in, many of them having photographs, and they are terrific pictures to look at. In a sort of negative way. Clifford, let's get right to it.
Thanks, Jeff. In particular, photographs you're speaking of, they represent a physical impossibility of claiming exhaust emissions. They are the direct dissemination of aerosols across the entire wingspan of an aircraft, physically distinct and separate from the engine locations.
Right there in full living color for anybody to look at.
The main topic that I will be speaking of tonight, Jeff, is an extension of an earlier discussion we had probably a year and a half ago or a year ago, I'm not sure, on electromagnetic applications of these. And I would estimate it probably will be another 20 minutes or so before I actually get into that topic, maybe a little bit less. There's still a couple small preliminary items I wanted to go over, and then some discussion of predictive modeling and work that I've done, purpose being trying to identify under what conditions these operations are occurring, and then the bulk of the discussion on electromagnetic aspects, if that's fine with you.
Sure, please go right ahead.
On a couple of these smaller items, as you mentioned at the beginning, you've noticed that I've changed the main title of the website to Aerosol Operation Crimes. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, and that is the use of language is important. And while I won't try to dictate the course for any group as a whole, I will only speak for my decisions and that is that it's fairly evident over time that I generally avoid the use of the word chemtrails for, I guess, a few reasons. Number one, I think the word has been maligned by now, and just language is important, and it makes an impression, especially when it is attempted to be discredited using the public media and public forum and official agencies.
Well, the same thing happened to the term flying saucer long ago.
Exactly, and that's actually my point here, exactly that case, in that the word has a certain connotation that stems back from a time when little information was known as to what was actually happening. And the term was coined and used at least frequently by a journalist that was well known for introducing the issue. That particular journalist I've had some difficulties with in terms of what I would call a pursuit of accuracy and truth on this matter. And I'm simply saying that I believe the term aerosols is a more descriptive and a more accurate term, which truly describes the nature of the operations, can be presented in a professional, objective sense to any interested party, and it would be much more difficult to dispute and would not carry the connotations of the hoaxing that the United States Air Force has attempted to ascribe to the issue. And so while I mentioned I won't try to necessarily unduly influence other folks, I will say that that is my decision to further substantiate the existence of this topic on its own merit for what it truly is, and to use that terminology as we confront those forces which continue to...
Well, I agree. As the research, as your research and the research of others matures, it is time to become more specific, and that's, I think, the next level that you have taken this to. I think you're correct 100%.
So that's why that has occurred. And as a further extension to that, I've noticed another source of confusion that has probably carried with us for 3 years or more now, and that is the simplification and the generalization that there's basically two things in life. That is contrails and what were or are popularly known as chemtrails. That distinction is just not sufficient. And what I would suggest is that we need to be fluent and comfortable with the use of four terms that describe different aspects of what we are actually speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
The first would be the conventional contrail, the classic definition, and all the attributes that are associated with a contrail. Many of us have learned a great deal about that by now. What I would refer as the phenomenon we are speaking of are aerosol trails, I believe would be a more proper term. And we need to distinguish between an aerosol trail and a contrail, as they are entirely different. We already have those two. What I would like to add to those two is the distinction between normal clouds and now what we have, unfortunately, are aerosol-based clouds.
Very good.
Aerosol banks now.
Right. And, boy, have we seen a lot of those lately. We shall pause and come right back and hear Clifford talk some more about this issue of aerosol clouds as opposed to real clouds. And there is all the difference in the world. Be right back. Once again, I call your attention to carnicom.com and scroll down and take a look at the pictures. After you've looked at the pictures, start to do some reading. There is a tremendous menu of material on the left-hand side of the homepage. If you're not online now, be sure and browse that. You can stop anywhere and start reading and be intrigued at the very least, I guarantee it. If you want to see also what aerosol clouds look like, There is a six-panel photo layout at the bottom of Carnicom.com. Right there on the homepage, you can see them and take a look at a beautiful blue sky and what happens to it when aerosols have been sprayed. It's all right there. And don't miss those pictures of mega sprayers. Just stunning. Clifford had just begun to talk about contrails, aerosol trails before the break. He mentioned the two there. We're moving on now, if you just tuned in, to talk about real clouds up in the sky and aerosol clouds. And what a difference. Now I'm to the point, Clifford, when I look up, I can tell by the color and hue and tint which are real clouds and which are not real clouds. It's close, and unless you watch, you might miss it.
Exactly, and I think it is helpful to distinguish between these and use our language accordingly. And, you know, a trained observer on this can now distinguish very clearly what the status of water vapor versus the introduction of artificial particulates and the effect that that has on the atmosphere. You know, a classic example would be the cumulus cloud. If folks will notice the commonly diffuse edge of the cumulus clouds that now occurs, you know, a classic example where you'd have a heavy operation on a clear day, then the clouds would come in on the subsequent day, and those cumulus clouds would basically be ripped apart and would exhibit diffuse, ragged edges as the aerosols are absorbing and spreading out that moisture.
Exactly. Now, normally cumulus clouds have nicely defined edges. They're beautiful.
That's right, and people can prove that to themselves by digging up the meteorology books from 10 years ago. Go look in the aviation instruction manuals. Go research meteorology as it has been taught.
Or remember back 6 or 8 years ago.
You know, look at look at the color photographed charts that are produced by you know, FAA and NOAA and this type of thing, and go prove for yourself what a true cumulus cloud form is.
Don't see too many of them anymore, unfortunately. They are shredded, as you point out.
The last secondary issue that I wanted to mention was to describe the aftermath of a very recent event, just so that people know, you know, what we're up against and how necessary it is to continue to confront and call officials upon, essentially, I have to say, lies that will continue to be produced. I would alert people to be on the lookout for an article in the Durango Herald newspaper in Durango, Colorado tomorrow, and let's see what that article will read. I don't know. I just know that it will need to have attention paid to it to make sure that the accuracy and truth gets out. I gave a presentation in Durango over the weekend and gave a local audience there about 3 hours of information of evidence, basically evidence, including a rather dramatic video and very descriptive information on my work over four years. I was subsequently notified that a journalist was writing an article for the Durango Herald, and that's fine, and that's great, and I hope the article is done well, and that's what I noticed, or that's what I requested.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just to let it be known, the journalist called me afterwards and said they had talked to NOAA, and I think, well, I know there's a division of atmospheric sciences up there at the University of Boulder, Colorado, and they were requesting the official response on this topic. And, you know, just to give the listeners a level of the, you know, inane responses we are still receiving, even after presenting, I would say, compelling and overwhelming evidence.
Agreed.
Of modification that has occurred. The two responses that I was given back from those agencies was, and the first one was, well, but that's just a contrail. You know, we know contrails. That's just a contrail he's talking about. That was one. This is after 4 years.
They can't even entertain it for a moment conversationally.
And the other comment was this. The other comment was, oh, I flew through one of those contrails once, and there wasn't anything in it.
So this is
a level of response, at least that was reported to me, from the official atmospheric branches up in Boulder, Colorado. So I would just like to see the article that comes out of the Durango Herald and have people pay attention to what they think is the truth and what needs to be discussed and disclosed, and the level of sophistication of discussion
That was at least equal to that of a sixth grade class.
Right. So I just want people to know that this is a battle we're facing, but it doesn't mean we have to lose that battle. We simply have to double up on our efforts and make sure the truth is.
Exactly.
Truth
I think many of us remember what happened to the USA Today article. It was
yes.
to be quite a revelatory piece. Turned out to be a little truncated, throwaway piece of fluff.
Yes, and the citizens need to assert their ownership in this media before this is all over. They have to reclaim the media, and they have to reclaim their country before this is over if we're going to do anything.
Well, okay, coming up on a break in just about a minute. In fact, let's take the break right now. It's a nice place to pause, and we'll come right back with Clifford Carnicom in just a couple minutes. I can't invite you often enough to go to Clifford's website. Those of you who doubt and are truly, capital T, truly skeptical are always welcome on this program. You know that. So go and take a look. Open your mind. Do some research. And start looking around up over your head when you go outside. Especially at night and early in the morning where a lot of the spraying seems to be being done now. 3, 4, 5 a.m. Sometimes I'll get up in the morning and look off to the east as the prevailing west-to-east winds move. And there'll be, it looks like Venetian blinds. There are so many trails. Horizon to horizon. Be right back. Okay, right back with Clifford Carnicom, getting an update on aerosol spraying in the skies over your head, folks. It's everywhere. All right, Clifford, let's talk about aerosol clouds a little bit more, if we can.
Thank you, Jeff. This next segment would still be regarded as preliminary to the main discussion tonight, so I'll try to pace myself accordingly as we go here. But I would like to talk for a few minutes about some predictive work that I've done. One of the most difficult problems that has certainly faced us since the beginning of these events is the when and the why of these aircraft and why they are in a certain place at a certain time. And what I speak of is not intended to be final by any means. It is simply a topic of research which I tries to put some limits on that question. Because no matter how hard it's been attempted, that stayed pretty open-ended as far as I am concerned in any kind of quantitative or, let's say, refined way. Now, understand also that there has been some understanding, I think, on an intuitive side and just on an observational side, that humidity is involved in what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it does help to refine that, and that's what I've tried to do. And please understand, as well as your audience, this is not intended to be all-encompassing, inclusive. In fact, almost all of my work is really offered as a course of action to investigate, not as any final report of all that is occurring from one person's perspective to the best of their ability. It's meant to open up the topics to press the issues. And that's what this one is about. And there's a couple other folks I wanted to mention, one by name. There's a Mike Castle that is a well-known researcher in the environmental science side on the East Coast. And, I can recall literally in the spring of 99, Mike Castle was asking me what I thought about the association of drought and the onset of these operations.
Uh-huh.
At that time, I did not have nearly the body of information, because I'm pretty slow and patient in my work. And the truth is, I did not give really full attention to his proposal at that time because I didn't have a basis for discussion. But, let it be known that Mike Castle, 4 years ago, early in the game, was putting forth the drought hypothesis as being closely tied in
okay.
with these affairs and was foreseeing the impact upon crop failures and this type of thing. So, you know, I want it to be known this is not restricted to my work at all, other than I'm trying to solidify that evidence over time. And this traces back to some work that I did. I see now that it was well over a year and a half ago. This was in May of 2001. I did some work. It was fairly quiet. I know that folks didn't pay too much attention to it because it wasn't real interesting or dramatic to look at. But it was an examiner's question as to why are these planes where they are? Why are they coming here now and somewhere else at another time? The conclusion of that work was that humidity is likely a significant factor in the appearance of these aircraft. And the work that I did, the end result, was basically a scaling of the humidity levels for any particular region. In other words, some areas of the country are more moist than others just by nature. Mm-hmm. But if you have limited resources and you need to get those aircraft dispersed on a continuous basis to cover that region, you've got to allocate those resources somehow. And so what I did in that work was I ended up scaling the moisture for each region. In other words, you find the times when the moisture in Santa Fe is at a higher level for its region. You find the time when the moisture is at a higher level for its region in the northeast part of the country, not just the magnitude itself, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sure, I understand.
A scaled relative humidity, in other words, unique to each region. And I did find a fairly strong connection. That was operating at roughly 70%. It was a study over about a month. The success rate of that was about at the 70% level, showing that if you were to scale the humidity to each region, an increase in humidity, and actually even more importantly, which comes up even now, is the change in humidity is actually appearing to be even more important than the actual value of the humidity at any current time. But that change seems to be a triggering event. In the math world, that'd be equivalent to the, you know, the first derivative of that function if it were any kind of smooth function.
Okay.
And so it was left at that point that humidity seems to be a factor, and I've got something that looks like it's, you know, somewhat helpful at the 70% level or so. So at a year and a half later, this has emerged again. I suppose my work a lot of times goes like that. It works for a while, then I'll stop and come back to it sometimes months later. And that's what happened here, because that always bothers me. You need to know these answers. You need to know why the aircraft are where they are, because that is part of the puzzle, is figuring out the purpose of what is going on. And what I wanted to do was just call attention to something that caught my attention, and that was July 27th. You know how you were talking earlier about how we have these clear periods where things are pretty quiet?
Yeah.
And that was the case. Of June this year, it was carrying through June, and it was carrying through July. And then, at the end of July, it was July 27th to be exact, all heck broke loose, basically. I noticed it here. I had reports from Texas, and I had reports from Colorado, and myself in New Mexico. And this place was just bombarded, as heavy as anything that could be seen. And I have a quote by one of the members of the Chemtrail Tracking Forum, which was a personal account, and it was actually horrific what was going on. And
The reports were coming in, the reports here too, yeah, they were
amazing. And the question was, why, after, you know, 6 weeks to 8 weeks of relative quiet, did things just all break loose? And I'm simply going to offer it as a suggestion, as a pattern that I'm looking at, I've included in my work. But one of the things that showed up as being unique at this point in time was the activity of the sun. On July 27th, the sunspot number for that was at an all-time high in literally months before it, if not a couple years. It was at 323 on July 27th of this year. And this had to at least be worthy of my attention as to whether or not the solar activity is a factor in this. And by the way, that's not exactly far-fetched, because we have also had extended discussions on ionization activity of these particulates. And ionization is directly related to solar activity. The energy that comes from the sun is known to energize the ionosphere. And similarly, if we have a modified atmosphere, as we have discussed, with electrically conducting particles.
Right.
It is not unreasonable to consider the influence and role of the sun, and that and the role that it may have in the electrical properties of this atmosphere.
Remember what Clifford just said, a modified atmosphere with electrical conducting properties.
So there are a lot of crossovers that come between these topics, but what I did was consider the role of the sun as well as humidity, and what I've done is developed a model. Models are only that. They are an attempt. They are an attempt to portray reality. They are subject to change. They are arbitrary, and there is nothing that writes a model in stone. They are an attempt to model the world and nature around us, and I have created such a model. And the factors in that model right now are basically the sun behavior, the sunspot number, the relative humidity is in there, the change in relative humidity is especially important. These are taken both at ground and altitude, and also the cloud cover itself. The percentage of cloud cover appears to be a factor. And remember, I can only speak for my location, Santa Fe, New Mexico. I cannot speak for the rest of the country. But I have developed this model. I have now tracked data for roughly 2.5 months. And a model, you check against reality. You keep working it and working it till it seems to fit the best you can. It's time-consuming and laborious. That model exists. I will only say that there seems to be an improvement in the determination of when these aircraft are likely to be here, because this model is successful now easily at the 90% level plus. Actually, the last test I ran was at the 98% level, which statistically is certainly a rare find.
Your model is functioning at 98% now?
In terms of statistical correlation. So, you know, there's lots of different type of tests you can make.
Sure.
But it is at a high level. And I have no doubt that there are strong correlations between the variables that I'm using and the actual event. There is still a level of uncertainty between the role of the sun, if any. I won't claim it necessarily being conclusive, but it's certainly highly suggestive. That's where it stands. And I wanted to mention also to let people know there are other people working on this that may not really be getting the public disclosures that they need. I know there's an individual on that tracking forum, chemtrail tracking forum, that does some pretty serious work in terms of meteorological prediction. And unfortunately, his work does not seem to be published. But be aware that there are some people working on this. And by having these answers as to when and where and why they are there, it is a helpful clue in understanding the nature of the observations. And so that's the purpose of it. Even though I know the numbers may not necessarily interest folks that much, it will mean a lot to us whether or not we know whether the sun is involved or not. And you don't want to be, you know, chasing wild goose chases. You'd like to know so that, again, you can support your evidence when you confront the officials that refuse to acknowledge the reality of these affairs. So, you know, that's what that work is about. And, you know, I wanted to mention Mike on the East Coast, because I know years ago he was very much attuned to the impact that this was going to have on our nation on drought. And I'll be talking about that actually a little bit later tonight, again, as it ties in with electromagnetic applications.
Any information about modifying or changing the direction of the jet stream that you can point to in our last 2 minutes this first hour?
More on an intuitive side, I haven't done a study, but I've seen some very, very suggestive data that came back really early in the affair of folks that had shown that the jet stream off the coast had been used to transport and deliver the materials. We also had the most unusual break or split up of the jet stream, 2 or 3 years of which there was really no precedent. Certainly, weather modification, environmental control is one of the main theses which I support as a consequence of these operations. So I would say it's a likely topic, let's say.
All right, very good. I remember when the jet stream broke into two. That was bizarre to see. Stand by. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news break with Clifford Carnicom. More on aerosol spraying over these United States, and many of you other folks around the world have seen them too for the last 3-4 years. So don't go away. We'll be right back